Next End Report, folks, sponsored by the New Moon Cafe, going at it since, what, 1978? Wow. New Moon's nightly specials, all the rave. That's right, Meatloaf Monday, Taco Tuesdays, Burger Wednesday, Steak Thursday, Steak Night, Fajita Friday, Weekend Brunch Specials, Friendly Tap Room, the New Moon Cafe. There's nothing like the New Moon. Mr. DePiro, how are you? Rob?
Gee, good morning. Well, that'll be very interesting with that that development, with that court ruling in regards to this SPOTUS situation, huh?
Well, you know, listen, there's a lot of unanswered questions and everything else, and quite frankly, the public has a right to know. I mean, it really, Joan Azarag is completely 100% in tune here. There's some transparency needed here, and listen, there's a lot of questions. And it's been at it for a long time, and these questions. It's about time. So she's going to do the right thing here. Azarag has presided over some very important cases here. She knows the deal. So we'll see.
All right. I guess...
That's the deal. Go ahead. Yeah. Talk to me.
I guess, we have to start off with the yet another person entrusted in a leadership position. And what ends up happening? Southfold Town Building Permits Examiner Damon Rollis, arrested just the other day. Boy Scout leader, Greenport, been with the town for 20 years. Possession of multiple disturbing images of male toddlers in explicit poses. He was a 46-year-old, but married. Father of two children from a prior marriage. In fact, Jay, he even ran for town supervisor about 6 years ago. The search of, according to Newsday and other outlets, when they searched Rollis' home, they uncovered a camera that was strategically placed in the bathroom. He, of course, has been suspended while Southfold Town conducts its own investigation. Facing a minimum of 5 years in prison. I know there was a request for him to work remotely from home, but he is understandably being barred from using a computer, so I don't know how, you know, he's definitely not going to be able to even do that. Does not look good. Does not look good for him, but, you know, here's a guy who kind of, you know, went under the... You didn't, you know, have the checklist of anything that you're supposed to be, you know, suspicious of. You know, married, father of a couple of kids, but I think you're kind of seeing that more and more in the past few years, if I'm not mistaken.
Wife didn't even know what was going on. Used the screen name Dirty Daddy. I mean, come on, this guy is as low as they come. Boy Scout leader, no less, right? Unbelievable. Amazing, it really is. You know, ran for supervisor. Wanted the trust of so many as far as that post is concerned. I mean, think as a Boy Scout leader, my goodness, if you're a parent, what are you thinking, you know, this week when you hear this news? Somebody presiding over your child. It's unreal. And the wife didn't know, have a clue. She thought everything, it was insane what she was trying to, you know, investigate bail options. You know, she couldn't believe it. She couldn't believe it. Listen, 5 years is light, in my opinion. This guy is as low as they come, you know? Scum of the earth, what can I tell you?
His wife, according to Newsday, quote, says, "All of this is insane to me." You wonder how they, like today is, we're into 2021. You almost wonder how do they operate to where these things are always going to be found on the internet. It must be so. I don't know. What do you want to say? Like, is it reckless? But to operate like that, you got to figure authorities are going to pull you in that net. And yet, this still keeps happening.
I don't get it. There's a sickness beyond. As far as everything is concerned regarding these types of cases, these guys don't think of getting caught. They just are in it for the moment, you know? That's what it is. So that's how they get their jollies, you know? And it takes an investigation and everything else, and that's what happens. So we'll see what's uncovered here. I mean, guy had cameras everywhere. You know, it's really a despicable story.
In his own home, too. That's the first time I ever heard of that one, which you kind of connect the dots, which means his own kids are the victims. And I guess whoever friends may have come by, but his own kids are certainly who you can make a case he's spying on his own kids. His house is his bathroom. Jay, I guess we're going to go to East Hampton. A little bit of a civil war going on there, which we kind of touched on last week. The East Hampton Democratic Party, basically seemingly a split. We talked about last week, Councilman, I think Jeff Bragman. He was actually passed over for renomination. Trustee Rick Drew, both were one of the first to oppose the Orsted Wind project. So they're kind of insinuating that's a little bit of a payback. And I think now you have two other candidates. One is the candidate John Whelan. He was passed over in favor of the party's chairman, Kate Rogers. It's kind of weird because normally these nominating conventions are smooth. You know, you're the incumbent, they renominate you. You rarely see a couple people get passed over, especially, you know, if you're the incumbent.
Well, you know, listen, it's very contentious out there. Van Skoyak is running for supervisor again, I believe I read that.
Right, correct.
So, you know, listen, if you don't think politics exists in some of the more remote places and everything else, they do. They're everywhere. And that's what's happening out in the Hamptons area, in East Hampton. East Hampton town has become a very political area.
Yeah, it
over the years.
Reminds me of a time in the mid-80s where Southampton town kept producing the same supervisor candidate. That would be Martin Lang. And even when he was passed over by his own committee, because there was a lot of pushback against Lang within his own party, he waged a primary after being passed over. He got the nomination. He won. And I almost think at one point, I think he even ran on the Democratic slate. So you have a situation in East Hampton, which I haven't seen in years, where the nominating party is chaotic. That's the only way to describe it. Over in Riverhead, they did announce that one went rather smoothly. Catherine Kent is going to be going up against the incumbent, that's Yvette Aguiar, this November. That was announced within the past week. Both Republican and Democratic nominations were held. Like I just mentioned, they went smooth. Catherine Kent is a first-term councilwoman. However, she's going to have to give up her council seat in order to unseat the first-term Aguiar. Kent taught in the Riverhead school system for at least 30 years. This is according to the Riverhead News Review. Hey, this ought to be news to you, since you've talked to him many times. Riverhead's Highway Superintendent George Geo Woodson intimating he's had enough. He's stepping down. He's not going to be running again in November.
Yeah, let me say this about the great Geo Woodson. I've known him a long time, man. I knew him when I first got on the radar as broadcaster out in Riverhead back in, 2001 it is now. He's one of the best, man. I'll tell you, we've got some really good highway guys, most notably in Riverhead and Brookhaven. You know, they're like Mantle and Maris when it comes to bad weather. They tackle it all and clear the roads. Georgie is one of the best. It's a position that, you know, that's big shoes to fill. Because he was out there, let me tell you, this guy is something else. He's a great guy, too. And never a time when I would call during any type of inclement weather where he wouldn't come to the airwaves. And if I called and a voicemail picked up, he'd call me right back. You know, we get him on the air. This past, in the last couple of weeks and this month, forget it. Always there for us. He'll be missed. That is a huge void right there. Huge. Because, you know, Riverhead's roads are very tricky. Very tricky. Side roads, narrow roads, that's missed. Well missed there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's wide open up on the Sound Avenue. If you've ever been up there, experience when there's a sizable snowstorm, it'll just blow across those open fields. I'm talking like, you know, right on Sound Avenue, as far north as you can get, to where there's no longer any woods. So yeah, and that'll just blow back over. So they've always done a phenomenal job up in the, I would say, you know, where Aquabog meets Jamesport. Anyway, Geo Woodson telling the Riverhead News Review, quote, life is too short to be putting up with political situations. And yes, you know, as you're well aware, he has had more than a few recent skirmishes with the town of Riverhead.
It's not an easy town.
Two others that were nominated, Jay, Bob Kern, president of the Riverhead Chamber of Commerce. He's going to be on the ticket with Councilman Ken Rothwell. And the Democrats nominated Evelyn Hobson Womack, as well as Juan Miceli Martinez for council seats. So that completes your two situations over there.
What's happening with the Shinnecocks and the casino? You know, we've spoke to Lance Gums on this thing. That you're going to see it, folks, in the next couple of years. What about the location?
Well, it seems by now it's going to be built on the tribal grounds. I had thought there was a chance that it's going to be located elsewhere. You know, others have thought of the same location that I have, you know, that being the EPCAL situation at Grumman. But Southampton Press, there's a story about it, front page. And Brian Polite, he's the casino, he's the head. He's the chairman, the tribal chairman, running the entire show there with press conferences. He tells them in just one sentence, very murky, the current area proposed on Montauk Highway in Southampton, pretty much across from Southampton College, not the first choice, but does not elaborate where the other choice was. But he is maintaining firm plans. The 76,000 square foot facility, all those Texas Hold'em tables, I guess 30 of them, 1,000 video lottery terminals, all going to be located in Southampton. He tells the Southampton Press the tribe's resolve should not be doubted.
I would definitely not do that because it's been a long fight. It's their land. You know, you heard Mr. Gums on with me a couple of occasions, you know, the billboards and the casino. Listen, they've been fighting this forever.
Yeah, and
it's going to happen now. It's going to happen now. Huh?
Jay, this is interesting here. Bob DeLuca, you know, he's the president of the group for the East End. So he, you know, obviously is going to weigh in on this. But whereas he maintains that this proposal is definitely going to have environmental impacts, he also did compare it and put it up against the town's approval of that subdivision 20 years ago, you know, across from Shinnecock territory. And his quote is, I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. He said, in his opinion, he's like, I think the tribe said that's it. We tried a million ways to explain the importance of this property, and you kept ignoring us. And yeah, this is, I think Bob DeLuca pretty much said it in a nutshell as far as analyzing how this came to be.
Well, listen, you heard Lance with me, and they're right. Listen, did the town ever do anything as far as consultation with the Shinnecocks on any of the building, the McMansions, as Lance put it to me? No, you know, and completely ignored it. It was almost like they were invisible. The way the town went about their business. And maybe if they would have incorporated a little bit of, you know, discussion, a little communication, a little recognition, maybe you wouldn't have all this bad blood going on here over the years. It's been going on forever. It's nothing new. It hasn't just materialized in the last 2 or 3 years. It's been going on forever. Never any respect. Never any respect.
And it really predates the current, you know, administrations in Southampton Town, you know, Southampton Town, Southampton Village. So on the surface, you would think it's all impulsive. It's they're refusing to, you know, it's you could look at it like, wow, they're putting all this stuff up with reckless abandon. They're not even talking to the town. There's no discussion. And when you really go back to 20 years, 30 years, I guess that's where this is all coming from. The tribe is saying, we've been talking to you since 1985 about situations, and now it's time.
And I go, listen, I came in and around the Skip Heaney days, you know, in Southampton. And it was going on then, too, as far as ignoring. And listen, they have their day now in the sun. That's all you can say, you know. Nothing they can do about it anymore. There's nothing you can do. Their land,
now,
they can do as they want. So, we'll see what happens.
There is some pushback, obviously, in the community. There's also some that are wondering how well is the casino going to be doing when people up the island have Jake's 58. I think that if I didn't read this correctly, there's going to be another Jake's 58 built in Holbrook. Am I right about this? I thought I saw that story in the Long Island Advance. I mean, you're going to have two Jake's 58, both Jake's 58s. They're going to be like 10 miles apart. Now, I think it was Jay Schneiderman who spoke about the traffic situation that could occur there. And his quote to the Southampton Press was, you may have with the traffic situation that comes onto the east end in the summer, so we're going to forget about anything with the casino at this moment. But if you talk about existing traffic, more people have bought homes than ever before out here and now are regular. He's saying you have an easier chance in the middle of the summer on basically, let's say, like, you know, weekends to get to Foxwoods by leaving Montauk's ferry system, then you'd be able to get there to Foxwoods easier than you could get to this Shinnecock Casino.
Well, you know, listen, we'll see what happens with that. But listen, they always wanted to get this done. They're going to get it done. So that is the bottom line. Anything else, my friend?
I think we covered everything that was going on with the Democratic Party. Oh, there was a dolphin, Jay. I mean, it's kind of really weird because there are two dolphins stranded in Southold in a place called just near Jockey Creek. Normally, if you remember about 10 years ago, we had a very warm winter, really incredibly warm, up until like the third week in January. Lots of dolphins. And then, just like a light switch, the temperature plummeted. I mean, it plummeted in the day. You had all of these dolphins that were stranded in creeks, tiny creeks, and they did everything that they could to save them, but, you know, they perished. So what's interesting here is they had two stranded. One they still can't find. They spotted it, can no longer spot it, but one had to be euthanized last week. It's kind of odd because there was no warm weather that preceded that situation. So I don't really even know how that came to be. I guess story, you are aware that a couple of years ago, East Hampton and Southampton Village, there were some who began to complain about the old leaf blower noise early in the morning. And the East Hampton Village did enact a law last year. It bars professional landscapers from using gas blowers entirely from June 1 to Labor Day. Only electric or battery-powered blowers. But I think that's like the entire 24-hour period. There are some now in Quogue who are describing it as a very intimate community, a wonderful place, and they're asking the village board, they're asking Mayor Peter Sartorius if a similar ban on certain types of leaf blowers can be enacted, citing noise. And Sartorius's response in an email to the community members is, quote, according to the Southampton Press, is my personal bottom line is I do not favor such a law. I believe that noise caused by leaf blowers is a relatively high-class problem that adversely affects small businesses and their workers. Plus, he's saying Quogue is more spacious than the other locations, those other villages that have put the bans in.
Yeah, so I don't have a problem
against it.
I don't have a problem with it. Just put a time frame on it. You know, so many times, you know, these guys are out there at like 7 o'clock in the morning. I mean, is there anything worse than hearing that at 7 a.m.? Especially when I'm trying to do a radio show. But in essence, I mean, that absolutely is the worst thing. Put a time frame. Do it after 9 o'clock. Do it after, you know, somewhere in that. Listen, everybody's got to make a living. Everybody's got a job to do. I'm just against getting in there at 7 a.m. and sometimes on a Saturday morning. You know, when people are trying to sleep, maybe, or, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. You know. Southampton Village does have a limits the use to, you know, certain hours of the day. So, yeah, whereas East Hampton has the full ban from June 1 to Labor Day, Southampton Village, you know, apparently has that timeline where you can't use it. So, yeah, if Quogue, this group puts a timeline in, then, yeah, but I don't see anything where they're speaking about a timeline.
Nothing there, really. Sir, well done, as always. Rob's Report brought to you by the New Moon Cafe. You can experience the best tacos, chili, barbecue, ribs, pies, late night drinks, you name it. Montauk Highway, folks, deep in the heart of East Quogue. That's the wonderful New Moon Cafe there. Good stuff, my friend. You stay stay safe.
Before you have a quick question. The Islanders, of course, you saw them throttle the Bruins last night. Very good Bruins team. How is it that Madison Square Garden is now allowed to have the 10% in, but the Islanders can't do it or will not do it until March 21st? That's almost a month away. If I read that correctly, the Islanders will be welcoming in fans, but whereas the Rangers and the Knicks are doing it, Islanders not for another month.
Hey, listen, I thought the same thing. You'll actually have frontline workers, 1,000 of them, on March the 11th. You're right, season ticket holders, 10%. That'll kick in on March 18th. Listen, the only thing I could think of, because I was thinking the same thing, why are we waiting so long, you know? I mean, the Islanders actually have a stretch of games where the next eight of the next, or seven of the next eight, I think, are home, something of that nature. So why can't they do it now? I guess it takes a little more preparation in this building than it did it at MSG. And maybe MSG started prepping all along knowing that the 10% was going to come down. The Islanders just maybe late in the switch as far as the new Coliseum is concerned. That's the only thing is there, because they're going to have to put in the protocols and everything else, the safety things and everything else in play there. So it's going to take a little more time there as far as the new Coliseum as compared to MSG. Good thought, though.
Yeah, it's a shame because it's the last year at the Coliseum. They are slated to begin playing at the new Belmont Arena. I mean, unless they end up with this weird situation, if you remember the days of Green Bay Packers where there'd be some games, home games played in Milwaukee. So I don't know. Unless the Islanders are going to continue to play 5 or 10 games a year at the Nassau Coliseum, they're going to run out of time very quickly. They'll only be down to like 10 home games.
That is a excellent thought. JT Woods, you hear that? He is our aficionado as far as the Isles are concerned. He has the inside track. Maybe he could find out. JT, you can see why it's taking so long. We'll keep on that. Sir, great stuff. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you then.
Good one.